Welcome back to the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show. Joseph Tygondovich will be moments away, but first, do you have carpenter bees? Or let me ask you this. If you don't have carpenter bees, I'm going to guess the answer of do you want carpenter bees is a no, and rescue can either fix the problem you have or prevent the problem before it happens.
Yeah, their carpenter bee trap stick also works on wasps, mud daubers. Carpenter bees bore holes and tunnel into wood to lay eggs and care for larvae. These holes and tunnels in the wood invite mold and rot into your home, deck, fences, and any other wood structures. Spring is the best time to catch carpenter bees before they mate. The trap stick can be used throughout the summer and early fall as well to control carpenter bees. Rescue makes a carpenter bee trap stick that is simple to use and pesticide free. You can hang the trap stick from wood structures you want to protect. You go to carpenterbeecontrol.com to watch a video about carpenter bees and learn how to prevent them. We can find the trap stick from Rescue. If you go to rescue.com, you can find all of their products for pest control, and it's made in the USA.
Yep, the trap stick from Rescue to take care of that. Holly, let's go to the hotline and bring in our guest for this week.
Joseph Tykonovich is a passionate gardener. He not only gardens in his yard, but his friend's yard and even in his closet with lights. He is an author, and his most recent book is The Comic Book Guide to Growing Food. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we thank you for taking time out of your day and sharing some of your knowledge with Holly, myself, and all of our listeners. So let's just jump right in. Not to take anything away from the vegetable growing that everybody's kind of doing right now, but it seems like many people have gotten houseplants in the last year. What are some great houseplants tips to keep those pandemic plants alive and thriving? Because we all kind of know we put it to the side and we forget about it.
Yeah, my favorite tool that I've been using with my houseplants is actually my smartphone. So I found that you can download free light meter apps for your smartphone, which will give you a reading of the amount of light. And it's really useful because often I have houseplants that are stretching and I know they need more light, but it's not really clear where in my house there is more light for them. And using that light meter app on my smartphone, I can walk around the house to my different windows and kind of figure out where it actually is the brightest sunlight to move those things in to give them more sunlight and keep them growing more healthily.
Well, that's definitely a really
good tip. Use that tip.
Yeah, for sure. So you are the editor of North American Rock Garden Society Journal. For our listeners who don't know, what is rock gardening?
Rock gardening is a style of gardening that kind of takes inspiration from kind of landscapes you would see on the top of mountains and the plants that grow in alpine regions. So it's often these miniaturized, really cool miniaturized little plants native to alpine regions or look like they would be native to alpine regions and sort of recreating the rocky landscapes that they grow in. So it's a really fun style of gardening if you like collecting weird plants because you can grow a lot of really unusual plants in a rock garden. And it's also a really great style of gardening for people with limited spaces because it's really focused on sort of this miniaturized landscape. So if you just have a small garden or a balcony or containers, it can be a really fun style to grow unusual plants in small areas.
So it's kind of, is it more like, would you consider it a miniature garden type genre or can it be like any type size?
It's usually miniaturized. Okay. I mean, it's a big tent, and I think everyone who does rock gardening would give a different definition. But the main emphasis is on these sort of miniaturized little tiny plants, which are typically found in sort of rocky soils, high elevation, sort of harsh conditions.
Okay. Well, let's talk about your new book, The Comic Book Guide to Growing Food. Has a ton of great information. What inspired you to write a book like this? And what are some interesting parts of the book that you would that our listeners would find intriguing to pick up a copy to read it for themselves?
So I wanted to write a book that was really aimed at beginning gardeners. And I think, you know, people who want to have a vegetable garden but really don't know, you know, don't know the first thing about it and don't know where to start. And I felt like it can be kind of overwhelming. There's a lot of information, a lot of moving parts to making a garden if you haven't done it before. So I set out to do this book, which kind of gives you everything you need to be successful if you're in your first year vegetable gardening, and then decided to do it in this form of a comic book or graphic novel because I felt like it was a fun way to present the information. So it's light, it's easy to read, it's enjoyable, it's not overwhelming, But it's also a really great way to pack a lot of information into it, because we can use all the visuals in there to really give you a lot of information in that. So I really think, you know, I wrote it for if you're like a beginner gardener who feels a little overwhelmed with trying to get your first vegetable garden started, or if, you know, you have a friend who's a beginning gardener, I think that's who would, you know, I wrote the book for, and I think would most enjoy picking up a copy.
Well, you aim for beginner gardeners. You gambled and won on that in the last year's time. and for even children of probably, I don't know, 8 and up, I mean, I've read it. It's very informative, and it's easy to comprehend. It's not a big novel or a bunch of really deep stuff. It's very simple. You laid it out very easily for anybody to understand it.
Yeah, that's great to hear. That was really the goal, because I do think it can be overwhelming. So yeah, I have heard, you know, I didn't write it like specifically for children, but I've gotten a lot of great feedback from, I got some really great emails from younger readers and kids who've read it and really enjoyed it. So yeah, I really aim to keep it informative, but also, you know, like give you the information you need to be a successful gardener, but in a way that's fun and engaging and not too heavy or overwhelming.
I agree. I think it's a really unique gardening book, and I think a lot of I could see many different people enjoying it. Now, we are talking with Joseph Tagoinovich, and he is an author and a passionate gardener. So lead in your soil is a concern for many. Depending on where you live, it could definitely be a concern. A few questions here. Is it safe to grow vegetables in lead-contaminated soil? How do you know if you have lead in your soil? And if you just send off for a test, like a standard soil test, do they automatically test for lead?
Yeah, so lead in soil, the biggest concern is usually if you're gardening close to a house that had leaded paint on it. So before 1978, most house paints had lead in them. And then that lead flakes off the house and contaminates the soil around the house. So the biggest concern is if you're gardening near an older home, and that's really when you need to get a soil test. So if you live in a newer neighborhood that was built after, you know, around 1980, you're pretty much safe there. But around older homes, or if you're gardening in like a vacant lot in an urban setting where you really don't know the history of that soil, it's a good idea to get a soil test. And so a standard soil test usually will just tell you what fertilizer your soil needs. You're going to have to add a little extra to get a test for lead. It's not a lot, but and getting a soil test is always a great idea to do when you're starting a garden. So if you do have an older home, it's really a good idea to get that test. And then if you do find lead in your soil, it's not the end of the world. You just need to take some precautions. So lead is not absorbed into the tissues of a plant. It's more on the surface of the leaves and the roots. And then you can get exposed by like breathing the dust or when you're working in the garden. So if you do find that there is lead in your soil, it may be a matter of moving your garden farther away from the house where that lead wouldn't be a problem, building raised beds and bringing in clean soil, growing in containers, choosing ornamental plants rather than edible plants. There's a lot of things you can do to deal with that, but it's definitely a good idea to get a test if you're gardening around an older home that might have had lead paint.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. I've heard this. Lead doesn't transfer into other soil, so if you can kind of cap it. You can put a raised bed on top of the soil that is contaminated, and it won't leach into, or am I completely
off? Yeah, that's my understanding, too. Okay. The biggest thing you want to do is then avoid, like, digging up, you mm-hmm. know, tilling that soil. So you can put a raised bed with clean soil on top of it, and as long as you're not digging up that soil and mixing it, you're good to go. And you wouldn't want to grow root vegetables, say, in that raised bed. They're going to send roots down deep into the contaminated soil. But you could grow things that are going to, you know, you're going to be harvesting the leaves or the fruits up in that raised bed. So okay. It's definitely manageable if you find it. It's not like the end of the world, but it's a good idea to find out if it's there, just to take some precautions to keep you and your family safe from it.
So many people are new to gardening as of last year, or maybe they're new this year. They watched their neighbors and family and friends garden, and they were like, we're going to give it a go this year.
Because we can't go anywhere.
Because we still can't go anywhere.
Right. What else can we do?
Right. So what are some good tips for plant shopping they should consider before heading to the garden center, getting overly excited, and filling up their carts? And I know maybe garden centers love that, but when you have 45 plants and room for 12 – we need some tips.
Yeah, I think the first tip I would say for your listening area is you need to wait on some things. I feel like this time of year we get excited when warm weather comes and there's still going to be a chance of frost. So you don't want to rush out too early and buy tomatoes or eggplants or peppers that can't take frost until you're into that, frost-free zone. So I'd say before you start shopping, get online and just put the name of your town and the words like last frost date into a Google search or any kind of search, and it'll pop up when you can be confident that you're not going to have any more frost and it'll be safe to go shopping for those tinder plants. So sometimes we get overly excited and start shopping too early, and then run into problems when cool weather returns. The other thing I think that's a good rule of thumb if you're a beginning gardener is to remember that bigger is not always better. So if you see a really large plant growing in a small pot, that's going to be root bound. The roots are going to be growing really densely in that little pot, and it's going to struggle to transplant well. So my rule of thumb is to look for plants that are roughly the same size as the pot they're growing in, rather than a really huge pot and a huge plant and a little pot. So sort of erring on the side of smaller plants and being a little bit patient with the weather might help people get off to a good start when they're plant shopping.
A lot of good advice. Joseph, we appreciate the time you've offered to us. How can our listeners find more about you and get your book?
Well, you can find the Comic Book Guide for Food from anywhere you like to buy books. And then if you go to my website, which is josephgardens.com, I have links to my social media and my books and all kinds of information there.
Well, Joseph, we thank you again for taking time with us and not only sharing your information with us and our listeners, but we'll take some of that advice and utilize for our indoor growing techniques as well.
Well, thanks for having me. It was really fun.
Absolutely.
For more information, please visit the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com.